Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Leary to Agar on the far side. Little dink at a bit of space for Tommy Bo to chase. Bo gathers. Seguin even is getting him. He's not going to get the ultimate. Bo's in underneath the Welsh post. Holy God in heaven, what a try by Tommy Bo.
Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Ken Doherty.
And I'm Reggie Corrigan.
And welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, it's a lovely, blustery, dry day. And of course to the weekend, hopefully a great start to the weekend, but the winds of change will sweep across the Aviva Stadium later this afternoon, and Andy Farrell can get the buzz back in Irish rugby as he makes a step up, of course, from Joe Schmidt's assistant to take charge of the side for the first time with Scotland visiting the capital. Reg and Peter will be getting stuck into the full Six Nations weekend just after 10 a.m. Well, with a first hour we have lined up after the papers, Dean Ryan from the Racing Air podcast will be marking our car what plans to be a gigantic weekend of racing in Leopardstown. The Dublin Racing Festival gets underway just before one, and the Grade 1 PCI Irish Champion Hurdle, the centrepiece of the opening day. And congratulations to Dean Ryan. 3 from 4, the lucky 15. 3 winners from 4 last weekend. Fantastic. Can't wait to see what his lucky 15 is going to be today. Also, Stephen O'Brien will be in the studio setting us up for the showpiece. That is, of course, the Super Bowl 54 with the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the San Francisco 49ers. And of course, what Reg wants to know is the set list for J-Lo and Shakira will be. Yeah, can't wait for that either. In football, not too mad of a deadline day across channel, but a big weekend of the fixtures lie in wait. Delighted to have Alan Colley along with us in the second hour. And in GEA, of course, old foes Mayo and Dublin lock horns once more this evening in Division 1 of the Allianz Football League. That's the second part of a doubleheader at Elry's McHale Park with Mayo and Dublin also doing battle from 5 in Division 1, the Little Ladies National League. Declan Drake will be on with us in the second hour previewing this and looking back at what was an epic clash between Dublin and indeed Kerry last Saturday. As usual, you can get in touch with the show or you can text us on 087 1155 777. And of course, we are on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, and our Twitter account at Sport1068. We're going to have a little look in the papers. Peter Breen, of course, joins as well. Very good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, Ken. How are you?
Were you on the lucky 15 last week?
I wasn't. No. And I think in the interest of all our listeners, I never tend to bet on the lucky 15 because I actually want just to win. So, no, it was a very successful weekend, I believe. So
not for me. I didn't do it as usual.
You're in my camp.
It's the same thing. Whenever I do it, there's never a horse within an arse's draw or any finishing line. Same thing every single time. And then I get this text at about 3 o'clock. Did you see?
Did you see?
There's three of the birds over there.
Oh, sure. Can't wait. Yeah. 10-1, 11-2, and 9-4 as well. And unlucky, like Garda Victoire just finished outside the top three, which would have boosted up even more. But
what was it? It was something like, was it a couple of 100 to 1 or something?
No, 2,500 to 1.
2,500. If the four of them won.
Yeah,
four
but the three that did come up was couple of hundred, I think.
Yeah, it was, yeah. 200 to 1.
Nothing wrong with that.
Not bad at all. So Dean Ryan will be as proud as punch. I'm sure he'll be bouncing to get on the radio this morning and we'll be talking to him just after the papers in about 10 minutes' time. Of course, there's a huge lineup at Leopardstown as well with all those Grade 1s and a huge day festival, of course, weekend at Leopardstown. So looking forward to hearing what he has to say. What tickles your fancy in the papers, lads?
Well, there's so much going on, you wouldn't even know where to start. Obviously, the big rugby game, Six Nations kicking off. It's getting me excited. I had a great night last night. I was up in the D2 in Harker Street. Oh, I've been in Harker Street for years. Coppers was my... You used to be there and all that. There's a big, massive hotel, the Dean, next door to it.
But apparently, you have your own locker in Copperface, Jackson.
I've been locked up in a few times in Harker Street. That's about it. No, I was there early because I was doing a gig for the Doddy Weir Foundation. My name is Doddy last night. Mm. And I was there early. Around 5:30, and they were queuing up to get into Dicey's across the road in the bar. 5:30 yesterday evening, they're queuing up to get. There was a queue 40 deep going down the street, and it's hopping down there. The Ivy Garden Hotel,
it's a great spot,
the D2 bar, the Dean. Oh, that's unbelievable. Unbelievable. We were in the D2 and we were doing this thing. So there's myself, Paul Wallace, Mike Ross, Rory Lawson, Scottish Scrum Half was there, and the great Scott Hastings as well was there with us. And we had a brilliant night, full of Scots. Atmosphere was great. We were previewing the Six Nations, obviously, and talking a bit about Doddy and our memories of playing against him and everything else. And it was, Jesus, great crack. The Scots weren't flying for him.
How is he?
Well, he's not great at the moment, I believe. You know, he isn't over at the moment. He's back at home, getting treatment and everything else. It's a very horrible disease, as we all know. He has motor neurons disease. What Rory Lawson told me last night is his legs are unbelievably strong, and he's, you know, that's what's keeping him going. But the rest of his body is starting to get a little bit frail now. But you know, for such a big, strong man, it's terrible to see disease like this taking hold. But look, you know, it is what it is. There's no cure for it, and you know that that's coming, and you know that those types of things are going to happen, and he is going to unfortunately fail and fade away. But before that, he has raised, I think the figures last night were in excess of 5 million.
That's incredible.
That has been raised so far for the My Name is Doddy Foundation, which of course is to help families and sufferers of motor neuron disease and research. So, you know, rather than just literally lie down and take it, he has fought and fought, and there's massive fundraisers going on all around the countries for him. So fair play to Daddy everybody that supports him.
Yeah, brilliant. Peter, what have you been up to?
Yeah, well, it's a huge weekend. I think it's a great weekend for the Exchequer with Dublin Racing Festival as well as the
bar.
Rugby on. So it's it's these are special weekends, and I think I'd love to hear Reggie's insights about the start of a Six Nations. It's like the start of a school term, I suppose. Everyone's on the same points. And it's a funny game today, because in the context of all of a sudden you can get a win over Scotland, but you can be out of winning two trophies as well with with the Grand Slam and the Triple Crown. So there's a lot riding on it, and there's a lot of pressure and a lot of tension. So just to see whether there's an opportunity for teams you mightn't expect to get a win. But there's that, and I suppose the big story this weekend was Kobe Bryant, and that obviously was a tragic loss, I think, for not just for America, but just for basketball and for world sport. And it's just the age we're living in, and instant news and the way it was reported. Like, for me, looking at it, and someone who's worked in the media and the other side of the fence, it was quite extraordinary. And the manner in which TMZ broke the story, the insensitivity around it. Obviously, there's a huge outpouring of grief. But this age we're living in, where people have to be out tweeting, have to be breaking news. Mm-hmm. It's a scary time, because you're looking at it. I was at Hillsborough in 1989. And you're just wondering now, looking back, if we had social media back then, the scale of it, the insensitivity. And there's so many tragedies, and there's so many difficult things you have to comprehend in life. I don't know, it's an enormous tragedy, given that there wasn't just himself and his poor daughter.
There was huge insensitivity from the papers, some of those national papers. That time, you know, when there was no Twitter or Facebook Instagram or anything like that.
Well, we're media, social media, they're all part of the same. And I just think, you know, I don't know whether it's just the society we're living in where we need to consume that information, where we want to hear the bad news about celebrities breaking up or going through whatever difficulties in their health or family. It's a strange age we're living in. And
I don't know if it's necessarily people's fault either, Peter, you know, because it's being forced down your neck. So, like, I had a job to avoid Kobe Bryant news. I mean, I was going through Twitter when it broke, and I didn't want to read everything about it, and, like, you know, this, that, and then someone put a slant on it, an angle, and this, that, and the other. I just wanted to, you know, take it in that this is a tragedy, this is horrendous. There were other families involved. Yeah, it wasn't just Kobe and his beautiful daughter that went. You want to just absorb that and go, my God, that's a tragedy, and just leave it at that. But it's been rammed down your neck. You don't get a choice no matter. So people get blamed for adding fuel to the fire. But even if you don't want to read an article or see it, you're getting it thrown at you. So that is, it's a horrible situation. And it's the media outlets that are more to blame than people themselves.
Some, but it's I don't know, if there wasn't demand, maybe they wouldn't be providing the fuel.
But that's what I'm saying. You're right.
A choice, so you could switch off your phone.
But maybe I didn't want to switch off my phone. I just wanted to look into news that was more relevant to me, but I couldn't avoid it. You know, that's sort of a, you shouldn't, the way I see it is, if you want to find out about something, you kind of have to look for search that something for it, research for it, rather than it being thrown at you whether you want it or not. That's kind of the way it is. And it's similar this week in our own tragedy, you know, that we saw this week with those three beautiful children. You know, it just seemed like total lack of privacy for those families involved in that, that they couldn't just... You know, it had to be front of everything. And even today, it's the front of every single paper. You know, it just seems to be getting rammed down your neck.
I think any of us who've kind of suffered loss or grief or like that, the big thing is you need to be protected, because it's such a unique and such a devastating time in your life that you're not really thinking rationally. And I'm not making any accusation about anything here. I'm just kind of making a broader point. Yeah. But there needs to be people who will protect and govern it. You know, I remember when I worked in at Leinster, and... when the poor unfortunate rugby player died, McCall as well. So, you know, so there's a whole, there is just that, things crop up, life isn't fair, you know, there's always speed bumps, and I suppose it's how you weather those stormy days is the true test of all of us. But yeah, look, I don't know, it's a time to reflect. Obviously it's a huge tragedy for a guy who contributed a huge amount. I'm talking about Kobe Bryant in the context of sport, who even for non-NBA fanatics, he transcended that.
Absolutely.
And very few people manage to do that in their sport, and his poor daughter, the other poor families as well. So, you know, it's just a talking point, because...
It was a sad story of the week, it was.
It really was.
One of the many, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
But, you know, sport, the great thing about sport is it gives you the chance to focus on positive starts. So.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, listen, look... Okay, let's talk about sport. Let's look at the positive side. Yeah. Igalo is signed for Manchester United. Yeah. And he's come all the way to China, probably with the virus as well. Yeah. He's 30 years of age. And that's our big signing, as well as Bruno Fernandes during the week.
You're laughing,
it shows you how bad Manchester United have fallen.
You're sorted.
Is he even able to travel to Manchester?
That's true, he'd been quarantined for about 6 months.
Did you see the lad on the bus, lads? All the poor virus sufferers are all on the bus, and here's the driver of the bus with no mask on or anything like that, driving the bus like he hasn't got a care in the world. Look, he's driving the number 16 bus down the quays there, you know.
I suppose if he's going to get it, he's going to get it. A little mask isn't probably going to help him anyway.
Okay, so big day of rugby. We're going to talk about rugby, of course, more in depth as well after 10 o'clock. As I said, Stephen O'Brien, we're going to be talking about the Super Bowl and going through the numbers of the Super Bowl. We were talking last week about the highest paid for two tickets for the Super Bowl, 230,000 or something like that it was. But the figures of... like looking in the Super Bowl, and Stephen O'Brien is going to come in and chat to us, so it's going to be quite interesting. An estimated viewership of almost 200 million in America alone, and probably another 100 million worldwide. And Reggie, all you want to know is about the halftime.
Shakira. Get it on. The little J-Lo. That's a double act. Come on. Who's your money on for that one?
I don't know. I think it's 50-50, isn't it?
Oh, no. It's all about the halftime show. All that rubbish. It starts about 4 hours before the thing even kicks off. The whole build-up to it. All for that 10 minutes of halftime. Joke. 200 million people with the same idea as me.
That song of you going through Reggie says Shakira
all from my head
all the way.
That's it for the day. You're welcome. As you're sitting down to watch the Six Nations referees about to blow the whistle, and on she comes in your head.
Okay, let's move on. What else are we going to talk about? Or is there anything else to talk about apart from Shakira over the weekend?
There's loads to talk about. No, but there's lots of sport, and you know, we mentioned the Gaelic coming on. It was an amazing game, Dublin and Kerry last Saturday night, and it was a brilliant crowd as well. You know, it's great to see that the Gaelic seems to have a proper structure and calendar now. And there's huge interest as well. So I think for Joe Brolly's debut on Air Sport and whatever else, it was a great kickoff for that. And it just bodes well with another fascinating tie this weekend with Mayo as well. And the hurlers are obviously in action tomorrow.
It's not an
the
easy
ladies.
Start for Dublin, is it? No. Kerry first of all, and then Mayo second week.
No, but I suppose, it's very tough, but I suppose it's kind of what you want when you're... your man spluttered over there.
I think I've got the virus
again.
Already.
Keep over that side of the desk.
Justin Hoffman over there.
Exactly. But, it was a cracking match, first of all, last weekend. I suppose I thought the Dubs would probably take care of Kerry a little bit easier than they did. And obviously, huge credit to Kerry. It's great to see Clifford with all the pressure that was on him standing up the way that he did. And, you know, great, again, a great advertisement for the game. And I suppose for Desi, the first one in charge, be happy enough. He was probably, I'd say they were nervous getting that first game, especially, you know, that kind of against Kerry and coming back from the trip and all that kind of stuff. They're probably nervous about that game more so than anything else. I think they'll get into their flow of things a little bit more. Being in Mayo is not going to be easy. You're dead right. It's a tough one. But I kind of think they will take care of Mayo. I'd say they'll want to step it up a little bit after last weekend getting the draw in that. So, and again, we just don't know where Mayo are at this time of year. They're very hard to read and they usually kind of kick in later on, championship time. So, yeah, I'd expect a win for the Doves, but you're right, a tough start.
Yeah. I was watching the Australian Open. I mean, you know, I love my tennis and all that. Team against Zverev yesterday, fantastic match. And of course, poor El Federer lost in the semi-final to Djokovic, who's in his eighth final. He's won it seven times, you know, the Australian Open.
It's unbelievable.
Now, he's on 16. So if he wins this, this will be his 17th slam. Nadal is on 19 and Federer is on 20.
Well, catching
so
up.
So it's really, really close, yeah. But he's playing a team in the final. Actually, the two ladies are playing. Sofia Kenin and Gabine Muguruza are playing at the moment. Muguruza is 4-2 up in the first set there. But yeah, it's going to be a fascinating final tomorrow, I think. Team is sort of one of the young bloods
coming up,
and trying to break that mould that, you know, that triumvirate, you would have to say, of Djokovic, Nadal and Federer. So it's going to be interesting tomorrow for any of the tennis fans out there. Looking forward to seeing that as well.
Good There's stuff. Great golf on as well. Yeah. Isn't there? You know, the Phoenix, Happy Gilmore Open is on Waste Management, and you know, Victor Perez is leading now on 10 under. So it's going to be, that's on the European Tour, sorry, in Saudi Arabia. But it's going to be, it's always fascinating. It's a 16th hole, isn't it, in the Waste Management. So it's a great one in the context of sport. Of golf always seems to be quite stuffy and conservative, and the challenge for the last number of years is trying to open the doors to non-golf people and trying to break down those barriers. So even though it's probably not the image that golf wants, it's fascinating. And if nobody knows what I'm talking about, just tune in and watch the 16th hole, where they encourage the crowd to go bananas around it. It's a big corporate day.
What's your ideas on this on the Saudi thing? You know the way a lot of the players, some of the players have boycotted Saudi Arabia. Now, we have a snooker tournament. We've signed a deal in snooker for 10 years in Saudi Arabia as well. Any thoughts on that?
Not really. I mean, I kind of get it. But I suppose apart from anything else, you're kind of wondering safety-wise about these places too, you know?
Yeah.
For big events and their targets and that kind of stuff. So I can understand why people would be boycotting it, given sort of human rights violations and stuff that are going on in these places. But again, it comes down to what's going to win out. Is it money, or is it going to be commercialism that wins out, or doing the right thing? So I can see how some of the players do boycott these different things, and I get it. But I suppose you'll probably find the ones that are boycotting it are the ones that are best positioned to do so, and they're not going to miss out on it.
Yeah.
The lads who are struggling and the lads who are trying to make the cut, they don't tend to boycott quite as much.
Yeah, I lived in Dubai, so I lived in a Muslim state, and the interesting thing is you can have one view of it, and I'm not trying to condone whatever, you know, we've all grown up with different backgrounds and different insights, but they're trying to modernise is the one thing I'd say about the area. Now, are they there yet? Probably not, but that's our view, so that's, you know, that's kind of subjective. The take I would have is that when you're opening the doors, they've a few different balls they're trying to juggle in terms of tourism, in terms of, as I said, modernising of society. So look, let's just see. We've got Qatar with a World Cup coming up as well, so that's going to be another question. But golf has been a huge success in the likes of Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Qatar. Let's see what it can do. Let's see what it can bring. Shane Lowry actually is 5 under. He's 5 shots off the lead in the Saudi International. So you know, hopefully he'll go on and continue. He looks like he looks pretty dangerous already, doesn't he, at the start of the season? So hopefully that bodes well. He tends to do very well out in the Middle East. So Victor Perez is leading on 10 under, and it's very tight actually up in the top. Graham McDowell is in third and 8 under as well. So hopefully there'll be an Irish star in the podium at the very end. But look, you can't condone a lot of it, but let's see if it can hopefully open more doors.
Yeah.
The rules are changing in terms of broader society there, so let's just see how it goes, because we all want to think about the next 10, 15, 20 years.
I know World Snooker's got great plans to, for going forward with snooker and setting up academies and going into schools and stuff in Saudi Arabia to broaden the game of snooker and help it over there grow. So they've got lots of great plans for it as well.
It's a great really country for it as well. It's too hot to do it outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you might as well be in a nice air-conditioned snooker hall.
Absolutely. Dave Kelly's got a great interview with James McLean in the Independent. I think it's going to be tomorrow, not today.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he was telling me all about it. He says it's a great open-hearted interview. And he said he certainly wears his heart on his sleeve,
yeah,
James McLean.
Absolutely. I saw stuff with him there during the week with his daughter, I think it was, that he had. And, you know, trying to just not hide her from all of this abuse that he gets on a regular basis,
yeah,
and try to explain it to her. So it's not easy. It's not
easy
he's going through, whatever you believe, like that constant abuse.
Yeah.
You want to be very mentally strong.
Yeah, okay. So check that out with Dave Kelly in the Independent. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. That's all we have for the papers, but we've got loads more coming up. We've got Dean Ryan from the Racing Air podcast. He had 3 from 4 winners last week, and I'm sure some of you were definitely on it. And hopefully we'll have the same again, because a huge racing weekend in Leopardstown, starting with some fantastic Group 1 races today. Stephen O'Brien is going to be in with us as well from UK Packers podcast. Of course, Declan Drake will be on talking about Dublin against Mayo. And we've got Alan Cawley as well, all about, of course, the football deadline day, the transfers, and indeed the bailout from the government for the FAI and what that holds for the FAI going forward. Lots to talk about. Send us a text if you want, 087 11 55 777. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Now, for all you racing enthusiasts out there, and I know a lot of you is listening and a lot of you have been texting in as well, Tony Sunderland, Brian Walsh, Cormac McAvoy, all the guys have been on about the Lucky 15 last week. Dean Ryan, 3 from 4, very unlucky, and the 4 was just outside the top 3, which would have boosted up even more. And delighted to welcome Dean Ryan to the show. You must be buzzing, Dean, are you?
Ken, you know, like that Gardle Victoire, the one that didn't do the business, was the one I think I said on the radio was my best bet of the weekend.
Yeah.
So, that one just
finished
didn't,
forward,
happen.
Didn't it?
Yeah, it kind of jumped the last just getting into the mix. And if that had been the very last one in the 4, it wasn't. Like, but if it had have been, we would have been in some in some state. I might have lost, you know, more than, the single. Yeah. My voice would have been well gone.
Don't worry about it. That was the one I backed.
Thanks, Reggie. Yeah, I always know.
Messed it up
basically
for you.
Basically, you have to tell Reggie not to listen to any of this section. We do better.
Well, now, the problem is, Dean, that you've got something to follow up on now, you know.
Unfortunately,
because, you know, people will be thinking out there that even blind squirrels can find acorns
every
now and again, you know. So you have to back it up a little bit, you know what I mean? So there's no pressure on you, you know. But we knew you'd come good, Dean. We knew you'd come good.
Well, you could not ask for better racing this weekend, could
absolutely
you? I mean, the Dublin Racing Festival is delivering on all fronts. They hope to get all the big guns out. They hope to get the ground right. I have to give them credit for that. Looks like they have. They're going to have Yielding to Soft on their hurdles course, and Yielding on the chase course, a bit more water going to go on there tonight to make sure that the Gold Cup horses turn up tomorrow. Looks like they've got it right. Set fair for a nice day. Plenty of wind around, but we've got superb racing.
Yeah,
it's Cheltenham, really. It's mini Cheltenham.
Absolutely. The champion hurdle, I mean, will stand out. You know, I mean, the horses in there, Honeysuckle, Classical Dream, Sharjah, and Super Sunday, Petit Mouchoir, previous winners, of course. But where are we going to start? Are we going to start with Leopardstown?
Yeah, of course. We have to. I mean, well, why not start with that champion hurdle? Because I'm not going to put a selection up in the race. I'm tied emotionally into the journey of Honeysuckle, Henry de Bromhead, and Rachel Blackmore. I thought this was a superstar from about 18 months ago. Sadly, she missed Cheltenham last year, but she absolutely showed us what she was capable of since. And now it's a test of her two-mile credentials. She probably is a mare that's going to want a little bit further. And, you know, if she wins this, she goes to the champion hurdle at Cheltenham. There's no doubt about that. Unfortunately, Classical Dream pulled up lame this morning and won't run.
Okay.
So you've got Honeysuckle against Sharjah, and it's a kind of a match because the passing of the guard from the likes of Super Sunday and Petit Mouchoir has really happened already. Now, if the front two don't perform, they can certainly pick up the pieces. But Honeysuckle versus Sharjah will tell us a lot about the champion hurdle. Whichever one wins, I think, will be favourite for the champion hurdle after this. So I hope Honeysuckle can do it, but I think Sharjah will have a measure at 2 miles on this trip. She just jumps a bit big and she's a horse that hasn't had to go and do this at this kind of pace. Massive test. Can't wait for the race. 3:10.
Yeah, okay. But we're not going to put that anything into the lucky 15 from there.
Okay. No, I mean, let's go from the start, because the first race on the card, the 12:50, really fancy latest exhibition, will have a big, big say in this contest for Paul Nolan and Brian Cooper. Beat a horse that everyone seems to have been cribbing since, which is Andy Dufresne at Navan last time, which I thought was a big run. Fury Road's done everything right for Gordon Elliott. Take it on Elixir Danny for Willie Mullins makes it three runners you've really got to take proper note of. Longhouse Poet will have a say in it as well. And that's like every race at this meeting, actually. It's very, very open. But latest exhibition for me, go for around 7-2, hopefully, with the confidence in the other runners in the field. That's number 5 and the 12:50. I'll be putting that in the mix. The Grade 1 Dublin Chase at 125 is Jacqueline Poursois against Min, both of them in the Susanna Rich Ritchie colours.
Yeah.
Superb race. Min's won it the last two times, but Jacqueline Poursois is supposed to be the second coming of Arkel. We don't know what we're going to get here. He could be very, very good. Now, he got beat the last day by Aplutar. Aplutar take him on. So, as I say, each one of these races, you pick three or four out and any of them can win. But I think Jacqueline Poursois will win, but he'd be quite short. So we believe in him out. Fakir Dideris for Joseph O'Brien looks like he's the one who could take the Arkle. And he'll be taking on Notebook, who beat him last time. There's also cash back in there for Willie Mullins. And the big talking horse of the week has been Bapone for Willie Mullins. Robbie Power ride that. Another race where I like Fakir Dideris, quite a short price, and I'll probably be leaving them alone for betting purposes. So I've only managed to find
another
the one.
Rich Ritchie horse as well.
There's so many of them running this weekend. We caught up with actually their racing manager, Joe Chambers, during the week, and they were really hopeful that Bapome and Jacqueline Poursois would come forward this weekend and win their races. So if I had to pick out a couple, apart from 14 running tomorrow, of course, they were the ones that they were very confident about.
Okay, but we're going to leave that one as well for the lucky 15, are we?
Yeah, I'm sure everyone has a favourite in the race that they want to back, and you know, there is a chance that I would say Notebook, Fakir Dideris, Melon, or Cashback, or Bapone win that race. I would not be surprised. Okay, it's that good.
Okay. What about the 3:45, the hurdle?
Yeah, you know, I really like one in here, and unfortunately it's favourite already. It's 7-2, and it's unaccepted for Willie Mullins and Mark Walsh. I think this could have any amount in hand. I wasn't surprised when betting opened around 5-6-1 that there was plenty of money for it. I could see it going off shorter, especially if the favourites have delivered for punters already on the day. So that's number 7 on the card, unaccepted in that 3:45. And in the other handicap there, and the 2:35, Max Mullins is Debouché, number 10. With Danny Mullins on board, was an absolute bridesmaid over hurdles. Finished second in a champion bumper, I think, 3 years ago at Cheltenham. And since then, took an age to win a maiden hurdle, which is just really unlikely for it, really unfortunate as well for a horse of that quality. I think he's going to make a chaser. He's in there at 10-1. So number 10, the 2:35.
Okay.
Number 7,
the 3:45. We've had him before in a lucky 15, the Boucher.
We have. He's managed to win once out of his three chase starts so far. I thought he was a little bit unlucky in the UK when he went over, and there's definitely a handicap in him, certainly off this kind of mark. So hopefully it will be today for him.
Okay. Are we going to do the one in the 3:45?
Yeah, so unaccepted goes in. Number 7 in the 3:45. Yeah, he got off. At the moment, he's 7-2. At the moment, Debouché's around 10-1. And you can get best part of 137-2 around latest exhibition. So there's a 3 from Leopardstown for this afternoon.
Okay, brilliant. Fantastic. Latest exhibition, Debouché, and unexpected off from Leopardstown. Okay. Mm. And you want to pick one from Sandown, I believe.
Well, I should give a mention that Lorena has been sent over by Willie Mullins to Sandown. She'll go in the Sealy Isles Novices Chase. She doesn't have anything likes of the quality that are at Dublin in at Leopardstown to beat. So that's an interesting move by them. She's been there before and won as well. So she'll go in that 2:25. But there's a horse in there who ran really well, I thought, in the Labyrinth, the old Hennessy, which was Mr. Malarkey. Goes in the 3:35. Number 3. He's 10-1 for a Class 2 handicap here. I think he's a graded horse. If they have him in good form, he'll take a lot of beating. And he's 10-1. He's number three in the 3:35 at Sandown. That's Mr. Malarkey.
Colin Tizzard and John Joe Dealer are flying form as well, aren't they?
Yeah, and John Joe rode him in that Hennessy, and I thought he'd give him a nice ride. He's a horse that would probably be able to mix at least a lower end of graded company, and certainly in a few of these kind of nationals, he may even go for Aintree. I can't imagine he'd have too much trouble putting away a Class 2 field, but he didn't run very well the last day on heavy ground. So if he does return to form, he's a big player there.
Okay, that's Mr. Malarkey, unexpected, Debouché at latest exhibition. Anything else that you fancy over the weekend, Dan?
Well, Sunday at Leopardstown is if anything's possibly better than today, because you've got a superb Supreme trial with the likes of Blue Sari taking on Mount Leinster and Easy Work at 1:55 in that Chanel Farmer Novice Hurdle. You've got Aspire Tower, who looks very much like the Triumph horse for Cheltenham going in the 125. Should have it all his own way for Henry de Bromhead and Rachel Blackmore, but the bookmakers know that 7-4 on. Quite like Jeremy's Flame, Gavin Cromwell's horse in the 12:55. That's the first race tomorrow at Leopardstown. That'll go off a decent price. Jamie Moore's going to ride it. Jeremy's Flame will be about 8-9-1, I think. And then, of course, it is time to see whether Faugheen, at 12 years old, can light up another one of these big meetings.
I love Faugheen.
Well, he'd go at 3 o'clock. We were talking to the racing manager for Rich and Susanna Ritchie during the week, and they just said the horse lets you know what he wants to do. Willie Mullins is driving the bus in terms of targets and deciding whether they go to Cheltenham or any of those festivals. But this is effectively a Gold Cup for him because the Grade 1 Flowgas Novice Chase at the Dublin Racing Festival. And they take on Battle Over Doyen, who is three times a winner already this season and looks a real smart horse. So does Easy Game. So if he can win that, I mean, he has to go to Cheltenham, doesn't he? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want him to be safe and sound and deliver for the public there, because there'll be so much interest in how Faugheen gets on.
He looks like
he's rejuvenated. Yeah, it would be, absolutely.
What about the 3:30? There's some great horses in that 3:30 as well.
It's the Gold Cup without the English horses, because they haven't seemed to bother coming over. I mean, Le Bag of Roi is there, but that wouldn't figure in an English Gold Cup. So I think the reason they don't come, Ken, and it's something that a lot of people talk about, is that they don't want to come and get beaten up by the Irish before the big show, because that's what will happen to them. The best horses are here. There's a fluttering of them across some good yards like Henderson and Paul Nicholls in the UK, but bringing them all the way to Ireland for an away match before the big game seems a little bit strange. So Ireland are kind of dominating this. But presenting Percy, I'm hoping that one runs really well for Pat Kelly and David Russell. They've been very open about the horse hopefully having to go for this now, because, you know, we're getting on with presenting Percy 9. The Gold Cup is going to be his last crack at a big one. So hopefully he can run really well. Ken Boy is very interesting now, with having had that run out the way behind Delta Work in the Savills. So pull down on the right, Ken Boy. That will probably be vying for favouritism with that Savills winner, Delta Work. So you've got Delta Work, a kind of up-and-comer, and looks like he could be the main contender for this year. Ken Boy is still sitting around Gold Cup favouritism. Mm-hmm. Presenting Percy went off favourite for a Gold Cup last year. And then some of the old guard, Annabelle Fly, Bales Hill. Chris's Dream is an interesting runner out of Handicap Company. If I had to have my life on the race, I'd have it on Ken Boy. But I do have a sneaking feeling presenting Percy might run a bit better than the last day. So a race just to savour.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul Townsend up against Davy Russell. Fantastic duel there as well. Okay, I'm sure you'll be going to Leopardstown, will you, over the weekend?
I will not get there today. Sadly, I'm definitely there tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. How about you, Reg? Will you be taking a trip up?
Maybe? I won't be able to, know, no. Unfortunately. Rugby's going to take over this weekend.
Yeah. Peter?
No, the busiest thing, our object in my house will be the remote control. I think flicking between both and the football and the rugby. So, It's a great weekend, and I think it's a great addition to the calendar for racing as well, and for lots of different reasons. So, long may it continue.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be some atmosphere up there over the weekend, Dean.
Oh, it'd be incredible. It is as good as when this meeting was two weekends split a few weekends apart. It was great to have those weekends, but to put them together to allow certainly a load. It's like almost like an English pilgrimage now to Ireland for racing, whereas Cheltenham's always been the opposite way around. So I think that's just fantastic. Great for the economy. It's on the same time as the Six Nations. They got the spot in the calendar absolutely perfect. And that's what it's all about, because it gets a bit of focus around it, which I think is great for everybody. So I can't wait for it. Hopefully it stays dry.
And what about poor old Tracy Pickett? She won't be there now after this year.
Terrible.
That's terrible news, isn't it? 30
absolutely.
Years.
Gone from RTE, Dean, in case you're wondering.
Didn't hear anything about poor Tracy.
I was just wondering. I didn't think there was any comment there.
Yeah, no, she was RTE have relieved her of her duties and have vexed her. So big shock was being talked about last night even.
It's the end also of Robert Hall on RTE. So that's a real changing of the guard. Is, yeah. I don't know whether they've taken an opportunity to do that at the same time. I mean, you've caught me by surprise there.
I'll tell you what, Dean, if you keep picking 3 out of 4 winners every week, you never know. We could be seeing you on we could be watching you on RTE. We'll be hard to get you.
I think, you know, the way that if you look at how it's gone in the UK, certainly with ITV and then on other stations that cover racing, everything is becoming more social, more younger, more in tune with the tweeting generation, which I think is the audience they want to grab hold of. But when you lose characters like Channel 4, when they moved the racing out of Channel 4 and you lost the likes of John Frankham and Jim McGrath, and even John McCrick, of course, sadly not with us anymore, but those kind of characters made racing for the people that now love it. And then you take a Robert Hall, who I think is retiring, and Tracy Pigott, if you're telling me, is no longer going to be with RT. You're taking away the face and the character and the voice of racing that's existed for so long. And I think when you replace it with, you know, the mobile screens and things, it doesn't have the same love. So I'd be very wary of changes like that. But there are some good broadcasters coming through, likes of Jane Mangan, Andy McNamara, and people like that who figure on Irish TV for racing, and they're doing a great job. So, you know, these things happen.
Okay, so latest exhibition, the Boucher Unexpected and Mr. Malarkey, that stands for 2001 Lucky 15. There you go, Dan. Well, let's hope we have some more lucky winners this weekend.
As long as we get one, Ken, as I always say, let's try and get one and have it win on the TV. That's what you want.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend, Dan, and be lucky.
Cheers, take care.
Okay, Dean Ryan from the Racing Air podcast. Okay, that's your Lucky 15. Latest exhibition, the Boucher Unexpected and Mr. Malarkey. We'll put them on our Facebook and our Twitter accounts. Stephen O'Brien from UK Packers podcast is in next with all the NFL news. It's Super Bowl. Don't go away. A very well welcome to you, Stephen. Ken. I know you're not the happiest man and you're not as excited as you probably should be because the Packers lost in the semi-final and you're still absolutely devastated.
Sticking the boot in live too. I mean, there's no let up with you. Well, at least I'm wearing all the Packers gear. It looks like Green Bay got sick on me today. But yeah, do you know what? You'd think I'd be upset, right? Mm. Disappointed, weeping in the fetal position here in the studio. But this is going to be a cracking game.
Yeah.
Because there's been some Super Bowls that like we've talked about and I said, look, it's going to probably be a one-sided game. Anything can happen. You know, this whole like any given Sunday type of lark, right? But in this game, it could go either way. Like I could sit here and tell you 10 different reasons why the Chiefs are going to blow out the Niners and they're going to win and vice versa, you know? And like even... I was listening to some podcasts on the way up in the car and I convinced myself either way that the opposite team is going to win. So, so we'll see how this pans out on this appearance.
Who are actually the favourites or is it quite evenly matching in the betting?
It depends on who you look at. Like, like the thing is, I think there's only, they put it 1 to 1.5 points between them.
Wow.
Now they say the Niners, but then the thing is the X factor is Patrick Mahomes, which is the quarterback for the Chiefs. If they didn't have him, he is the X factor in this game because you never know. I mean, this was a team that were down 24-0, you know, and then I think they're the only team in NFL history that have been down 20 points in a game and then came back and won by 20 points. Like, this is the magic that Patrick Mahomes has.
Mm.
And they talk about it. Joe Namath had it. And there's a couple of other quarterbacks that have it. Tom Brady's been criticised lately, right, for the last, like, 20 years, that he's a system quarterback, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He is an X factor and he's brilliant. And I don't knock the Patriots at all. I think it's fantastic what they've done. And Tom Brady is fantastic and he will go down probably as the best quarterback in history.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you look at him, it's not this sort of, you know, dinking and dunking, diving around, you know, ripping off mad runs. And they call it sort of tilting the field in your favour.
Yeah.
He'll do the job for you, no doubt. But Patrick Mahomes is that player. So he's the player that you look at him and you're like, oh yeah, he's different.
He's the complete sort of quarterback, you say.
He's not the same as one of, well, you two of you sporting legends. So, like, yeah, fair enough, right? Me? No, you know what I mean? He's different to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one of the most watched sporting spectacles in the world, you know, like, give us some of the numbers that are going to be sort of tuning in.
Yeah, now again, this is all advertising revenue right? So what they'll tell you is they'll say, oh yeah, everybody will be watching it, you know what I mean, there'll be babies being born under Niners fans already, you know. So that will happen because they're trying to get up their ad revenue. So for instance, it was 5.25 million for a 30 second slot last year. It's 5.6 million now, and that's because they bring out these viewership numbers. So they say 194 million in America alone, which is insane, especially because that's, you know, what's that, one third of the population, if not more, and then another 50 to 60 worldwide. Now they say it's the most watched game on turf, but then they kind of forget about the FIFA World Cup when our race is going to last year, you know, 517 million live audience for that game. But then, you know, they say that there'll be upwards of 250 million people sort of tuning in and out. And the thing about it as well is, and this is the sort of patronising stuff that you get, right, in this day and age about sports. Now in Ireland we have camogie and women's sports, and you know, women's sports are great and all that kind of stuff, but for whatever reason worldwide, and especially the narrative in the media, is always like, oh sure, you know, the women are just going to tune in for a halftime show, you know. And it's so ridiculous.
I'll be tuning in for that. Hold on, don't be sexist on that now, Stephen. I'll be tuning Reggie, in Shakira come on baby.
The reverse sexism there. It's weird, and he listens to it with the thing on mute as well, which is really odd. So the thing is, is that 46% of the viewers were female last year, right? So all of this sort of stuff of like, ah, we'll throw something fun on for the girls halftime, right? It's so ridiculous, 46%. And as well as that, it was the most watched event last year for teens and kids, right? That kind of feeds into what I was saying about Patrick Mahomes. So here's a guy who, if you don't have a team, he's so exciting that, you know, kids are going out buying his jerseys. So that's what the NFL want. They want this guy in the NFL because it's already good for the ratings. But then also, it's like anything else, they want to get you wherever you are, you know? So the streaming as well. So they have like 2.6 million viewers every minute last year, which was up 31%. So now if you're doing the graveyard shift and work or whatever, now they have NFL Game Pass and they're trying to get you to tune in still. And more often, what they're going for as well is social media stuff. That's where it's all at. So you can see that they're signing all these deals like streaming games on Twitter and all. So last year, there was 32.2 million social media interactions across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And again, where does that peak? Halftime, right?
Why?
Because Reggie's tweeting about Shakira at halftime, right? Pumping out at least 1 million.
I don't leave J-Lo out either, no, in fairness. We'll give her a mention too.
Yeah, that's right.
All our listeners now, and me included, I have this sort of vision of Reggie shaking his booty in front of the TV.
Twerking Kerrigan is what we call him here at Sunshine Radio.
You wish you could see that.
Do we have any kind of a sense of what the... which ads and which companies are spending the big money on the ads for? Because that was always an interesting wasn't it? Snickers and Budweiser.
Pepsi. Yeah.
Over the years.
It's the same ones, and actually what they have is like Porsche are coming back for the first time since I think 1979 or something. Really? So you have all these companies sort of coming back.
Yeah, the American economy is doing well, lads. That's the big names, the big brands are back.
All that wall building, huh?
Yeah.
So can you tell me, I'm just going to throw this curveball, can you tell me the carbon footprint?
Oh, well, that's for the carbon footprint sports show. That's for next week.
Okay. So, listen, who are the guys that we're going to... You mentioned the quarterback there. Who else can we be looking out for? Who's going to really excite us and who's going to score the touchdowns?
Well, the thing is, we can't pass up the head coaches either, right? So, this is kind of... We spoke about this last year. I won't wax too lyrical about it, I know, because I want to get on to the exciting players, right? But with the head coach is Andy Reid. He's the old school guy. So, he was the Bill Belichick of this year, sort of last year. And then... we have Kyle Shanahan, whose dad won two Super Bowls with the Broncos, right? He was actually a ball boy for one of the Super Bowls that his dad was the offensive coordinator for the Niners, which is the team his son now coaches, right?
Wow,
so it all comes back around.
Fantastic.
So he was the ball boy there. And as well as that, a good talking point about this as well is that there's an awful lot made of Mike Shanahan, who won two Super Bowls, his son Kyle Shanahan, who coaches the Niners, and that can he win it. They're the only father-son duo to sort of head coach two teams going into the Super Bowl. But also Andy Reid, he has his son as a linebackers coach. Now, he got brought up on drugs and gun charges a couple of years ago, so they kind of... You know, it's the whole American underdog story. Yeah, but look, oh, look, he rags to riches kind of stuff. So that's going to be interesting. And as well as that, people might remember Kyle Shanahan when he was the offensive coordinator for the Falcons when they completely blew it against the Patriots. They were 28-3 up and they were sailing. So he's after coming into this. And of course, he gets like banged in a big spot with this whole thing about people like, the minute he gets up on the podium, people are like, oh, tell us about that massive loss you had. And you're like, my God, like, this is my moment of glory. You're killing me. But he was saying, like, it sticks out to him that no lead is safe now. So if he goes up in this sort of Super Bowl, he's not going to take his foot off the gas. Now, that might lead to two things in this game. And I'll get on to the players now in 1 second. Is that if he's up to a big lead, does he try to take loads of risks to try prove he's not going to, you know, blow a big lead? Or does he sit on that lead and think, I have to protect it because I can't be too risky? Who knows what's going to happen? Now, I'm going to mention a guy who broke my heart, right? Raheem Mostert. No one's really talking about him that much, but he got 220 yards in the game against the Packers, which isn't done. 4 touchdowns.
That's amazing.
He embarrassed us, right? Now, people say about the Niners is that all they do is just run the ball on you. We haven't seen Jimmy G, which is their sort of, you know, model-style quarterback, right? So he's just ridiculous. You know, you can pressure him and he's still fantastic. And the thing that they say about the Niners is if they go behind, which you can do against the Chiefs, can he bring their team back? But he's the second best quarterback when he's losing, right? So I'm going to just throw loads of stats at you. So with the likes of the Niners is that they can run the ball on you and they're fantastic. They have an unbelievable defense as well. But people look at it and go, oh, they just got lucky against the Packers. They didn't realise that this Mostert guy, they were playing about 10 different run schemes to break open lanes for this guy. So you think it's just boneheaded 1930s play, just keep running the ball down their neck and you'll win. But the thing is, the X factor, Ken, and the person that I'm looking for, and I've mentioned them only about 14,000 times, is Patrick Mahomes. You know, this guy was 20 points down, brought him to 20 points back up again. You know, he goes on blistering runs. You just can't contain him. And he has the best quarterback rating in the NFL when you pressure him. So the thing that the Niners are going to have to do to win the game is really bring the pressure to Patrick Mahomes and make him one dimensional, because they will notch up an unbelievable amount of points on you really, really quickly. Mm. They had 7 touchdown scoring drives consecutively. So that's in a row. So the minute they take the field, he'll score a touchdown on you. Then he's off the field again. You have to do what you can do. And then you know by the time you let him back out again, you're going to be 7 points down again. It's unbelievable.
He scored, he's the second youngest Super Bowl winner. And 75 touchdowns and 9,238 yards in his first 30 games.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, they don't need to run the ball with him. And that's the thing, is that you talk about trying to make a team one-dimensional. So what the Chiefs will try to do is, and what they did against the Tennessee Titans, we spoke about Derrick Henry. And Reggie is a big man here, right? Mm. But Derrick Henry would make Reggie look like a small child, right? This guy was absolutely huge. So would
Shakira.
Looking at the boy again, fumbling around and sort of stuttering. But so Frank Clark for the Chiefs, I mean, this guy's 4 sacks in the offseason. He's on his way to 5+ sacks, which he'd only be the 8th player in NFL history since they start sort of taking note of sacks to do it. So the thing is, you try and make a team one dimensional. So that's what the Chiefs are going to try to do to the Niners. They're going to try and make Jimmy G throw the ball, because he hasn't really done it in the postseason. He threw 8 times against the Packers, which is absolutely ridiculous. But then on that side of things, Patrick Mahomes, you look at, he's got weapons like Travis Kelce. He's the first tight end in NFL history with 4 consecutive 1,000 yard receiving seasons. What does that mean? Well, Devontae Adams is the best receiver for the Packers, and he only got 997. So he's the main target for Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was in trouble. He just looks for Devontae Adams and goes, I need to get it to this guy.
Utilized 4 times at a minute.
So he gets 1,000 yard receiving seasons every single year for 4 seasons, which is just unbelievable. And in fact, both of these teams, what makes them kind of unique is their tight end, which is like a giant wide receiver, is a top receiving target for both teams, and they're usually the safety valve, and they usually work the middle of the field, which is very hard. So you expect these sort of highlight reel plays, the guys flaring down the sidelines and all this type of stuff, but then you have this giant human in the middle of the field who's just going to catch the ball, and he's kind of the safety valve here. Another guy to look out for is Tariq Hill. He's the fastest wide receiver in the NFL. He's got 21 career touchdowns of 40+ yards, which ties Jerry Rice, which we'll all kind of, any sort of NFL head will know. This guy, he just the defensive coordinator for the Packers, when he first saw this guy, he said, you just can't stop him. And they say, what are you going to do to stop him? He said, we just can't. We're just going to hope that, you know, he doesn't get the ball as much, as they don't target him as much.
Or he falls over.
Yeah, so he's the X factor in this game. So really, to sum up what to look out for in this game, really, is the fact that, you know, do the Niners get their run game going? And if they do, it's going to be incredibly hard for the Chiefs. But the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, who can just go out and score every single time.
Yeah.
Like, they have one of the quickest games in the NFL history, in the sense that they just keep like slinging the ball the whole time, and they just run up the score to a ridiculous amount. It could go either way. I could sit here and say, you know, the Chiefs are going to win, the Niners are going to win, and it's hard to tell you who to put money on. But the Niners are probably favourites because they've got the best defence and the best run game. But if you want some exciting thing, it's going to be the Chiefs.
Okay, we've got about less than 40 seconds left. In your professional opinion, after all those stats, after mentioning all those players, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Shakira.
Richard can't contain
it. J-Lo will be a close second. Yeah. She'll be a close second, but Shakira will definitely win.
Right, then in third, I reckon the Niners probably eke it out. I don't want them to, and I want Patrick Mahomes to win. I want it to be a fairy tale story. You know, I need the third quarterback under 25 to lift the Super Bowl trophy behind Tom Brady and Brendan Roethlisberger, but I reckon the Niners are probably going to win.
The Niners are going to win. And what's Shakira's song? What's our opening song, Reg?
Shakira.
Okay, Stephen O'Brien from UK Packers. Enjoy the Super Bowl. It's going to be fantastic. Super Bowl 54, the Chiefs against the Niners. It's going to be fantastic. Have a great weekend. Enjoy, and thanks very much. And we'll have you in again next week to tell us all about it. Lots of texts coming in about our Lucky 15. Yes, Dean Ryan did get 3 from 4 last week. And here's your Lucky 15 for this week, starting at Leopardstown. 12:50, latest exhibition. The 2:35, also at Leopardstown. The Boucher. The 3:45, unexpected, also at Leopardstown. And at Sandown in the 3:35, Mr. Malarkey. Latest exhibition, the Boucher, unexpected, Mr. Malarkey. That's your Lucky 15 from Dean Ryan's Racing Air podcast. It is, of course, a huge rugby weekend. And, of course, Ireland facing Scotland today. 4:45, of course, at the Aviva. Wales take on Italy in the early game at 2:15. And, of course, France against England tomorrow as well. It's going to be cracking. We're going to dissect it now with Peter and, of course, Reggie. And, lads, I know you are very, very excited. It's a new dawn, of course, new coach. And how, Reggie, do you think he's going to start? I mean, he's going to mix some of the new players with some of the old hards and the sort of the faithfuls, as you would say. But how is Mr. Farrell going to start off?
Well, that's a $64 million question, as they say. But my own feeling on it is, just looking at the team that he's picked and the way he's sort of set it up, I'm excited about what he has. We've got a back three there that are picked on form, which is what we were crying out for. So we've got that. We've got a back three that's picked on form. We've got an incredibly exciting fullback in Jordan Larmour. Andrew Conway has had an amazing season, and Jacob Stockdale's form is back for Ulster, and he's finishing well and he's playing really good rugby. So when you see that and you look at, you know, you've got Bundiaki in the centre, many might have thought that Henshaw might be the choice there, or, you know, there could be other options, you know, but you've got Ringrose, whose distribution out to the wings is really good when he gets ball good and early. It seems to be set up for trying to play an expansive game and move it to the wings and get around Scotland in that way. That seems to be the setup. Then when you add in the fact that he has gone with Caelan Doris at eight, and he's changed things up in that back row and pushed Stander out to the six role, and Van der Fleer was always going to be the seven. Again, it's a dynamic back row that should be able to get them quick ball and something that the back line can use. Now, one point on that is, it's set up to get really quick ball, but we have Murray in there who wouldn't be the quickest distributor. So from nine, he would be, like, Murray's world-class player, no question about it, and his form is coming back, and, you know, I'm not disrespecting him in any way by saying that he wouldn't be as fast as the other two as a distributor. So I'm just worried that he might not get the ball away as quickly as the likes of Cooney would, or maybe even McGrath if he was there. So will it slow down the ball getting to the wings, or bringing in the Jordan Larmour and using that? But the intention, from what I'm seeing by that lineup, seems to be that we're looking to play a more expansive game and a more attacking game. And that would be brilliant, because that's what we need. And it's a very solid Irish team. I get I completely get the point of him picking Murray. I understand it entirely. It's a very difficult thing for Andy Farrell to go and straight away launch into massive upheaval, which it would be really, in changing the Murray-Sexton combination and putting Cooney in there. Even though Cooney's form has been better, and that's the reality of it, you can see how he wants to go with a little bit of stability there. Maybe not rush into complete change and throw Cooney in at the deep end and put too much responsibility on him, and maybe bring him in then after 50 minutes and see what happens there. So it's an exciting lineup for Ireland. It's set up to be a cracking match. We don't know what we're up against either. That's the thing with Scotland. They're very all over the place, is probably the word to use. There seems to be a little bit of unrest in that camp. Gregor Townsend was left with little choice but to leave out his star man Finn Russell after he went on the beer. And that's the only way to describe it. That's exactly what he did, which is completely wrong of him, and he should never have done that. It's disrespectful to his country and his teammates and everybody else. So I think Gregor was put in a tough position, but he made the right call in it. So we don't know what we're getting against Scotland, but from an Ireland point of view, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, can you make a case for Scotland today, Peter? I mean, as Reggie said, there's a little bit disjointed. It's one of those sort of championships that, you know, we have a lot of new coaches, a lot of fresh faces. So, you know, anything can happen really here, I think.
Yeah, I suppose you look back to history, we have a habit of being mugged by Scotland. I'm thinking back to 2010 when Dan Parks got a penalty in Croke Park and they won 23-20. He was a far stronger Scottish team then, and I don't think they're anywhere near that. And as I said, when you take out a world class player like Finn Russell and the mess that had to have some sort of effect on the morale of the squad as well, you'd worry for Scotland actually today. The only thing is, it is very unusual for teams to hit top speed and top gear in round one. So, you know, that might be something whereby I don't think it'll be a walk in the park at all for Ireland, but they should win quite comfortably. You're right, I would agree with a lot of Reggie's points. I think the phasing in of new players, the likes of Caelan Doris, is very important. Ronan Kelleher, I think looking at the Ireland bench is really, really exciting. And I know it's unusual to kind of start at the end and as opposed to the start, but we've huge experience now. Kilcoyne, Porter, Toner, Peter O'Mahony. I think when you bring on Ronan Kelleher, you know, he's going to have familiar people, line out specialists like Toner and Peter O'Mahony, who will hopefully guide him a little bit more in terms of the line out play and set piece. But then Cooney, Henshaw, Ross Byrne, that's really, really exciting. And that's where I think the winning of the game will be for Ireland. Scotland will be looking to play smart. Whether they can keep Hastings, whether he can control the game at 10, In the absence of Russell, with the wind, with the fact it's going to be blustery, I think obviously Sexton's going to have a massive say over that. And it's a big game for him as well, his first game as proper game as captain coming into the Six Nations. So it's very exciting. It'll be interesting to see what the Mike Catt here is going to bring in terms of whether there's going to be greater width. John Fogarty as well at scrum. And Andy Farrell as well. He's the star of the show at the moment. A lot to look forward to. Gregor Townsend and Eddie Jones are the only two coaches who have been retained from last year across each of the six teams. So that's another dimension. There is a bit of experience there. And now Scotland aren't a bad team, but Ireland should have the edge.
Yeah, and Reggie, the team is dominated from players from Ulster and Leinster. And two teams who have been in fantastic form this term as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's full of confidence.
It's a rewarding, you know, results team. It's a picking on form team. And that's what we've cried out for, and we've got it. So, you know, I suppose the big question for most people is, I think everybody expects Ireland to win. There's no question about that. It's just how they're going to win and what they're going to do. And are we going to be facing, like, Joe Schmidt too? The same stuff continued on but with new players? Or is there going to be something different in that attack that we haven't seen before? There's been promises of it. Easterby has come out and said that there are going to be things that we use against Scotland that they haven't seen before.
13-man lineouts, that kind of thing, right?
I hope we're not going
Warren
back
Gatlin
to that.
Days.
Yeah, they don't quite work so well. But I suppose what we're looking at, we're looking at ball players there. We've got Caelan Doris there, who's, you know, I heard him described last night as a kind of a Jamie Heaslip-esque player who can distribute the ball very well, fantastically skillful, but also great pace and power as well. And Stander at six, you know, it's a different role for him. It probably might be more suited to him because it might give him a little bit more freedom. He was being marshalled very well at eight by most people, and they kind of had worked him out. So it's not a bad decision to move him out of there. And obviously, Ryan and Henderson, I find that a very, very exciting second-row partnership. And our front row's savage, to be honest with you. It really is. I'm excited. I suppose one of the biggest areas I'm really, really interested in is the hooker area. I mean, Herring coming in there, but also Kelleher coming off the bench. I mean, we need a new era of hooker, and we need some excitement there. It's been, you know, Rory Best was a great servant and all the rest, but it did get a bit stale towards the end in that area. So we needed to inject a bit of life into that area, and these are two players who can bring that. So I'm actually very excited about that hooker situation. And I suppose, like everybody else, I'm going to be intrigued about the nine and how Murray gets on.
Yeah, I mean, Murray, you know, he has been struggling for form, and I suppose Farrell has to really sort of find out whether it's just, is it down to injuries or the team he's been playing in? He's got to give him that chance, hasn't he? And that's it's going to be an interesting partnership himself.
Park Farrell's relationship with Murray with Ireland over the last couple of years alone, he obviously knows him from the Lions setup as well. So it's a massive statement of faith into a player, as we've mentioned, is a world-class player. By no means does it weaken the team. It's great to have that competition. I feel for Luke McGrath. I genuinely thought Luke McGrath could have been in, but where do you fit in three scrum halves into two? So, look, I think it's a huge statement of faith in Murray. It's deserved. He's got credit in the bank, but he has to perform today. So that's
it's pressure on Murray today is huge. There isn't a more pressured player on the whole pitch today than what Murray is going to be under. And that's, you know, you feel for a guy under that level of pressure, you really do, in a world stage. But this is where his experience and his self-belief will have to come in. He's got a good team around him, a very good team around him on paper. That's a solid, solid Irish team. Based on that pack of forwards, I would say quite confidently that Murray should be getting excellent first phase ball, and with that back row there, not so bad second phase either. So you're kind of saying to yourself, right, look, we're giving you all the tools to do something great today. And now, by doing something great, I don't mean he has to go and score three tries or he has to do something else, but he needs to maybe get away from the box kicks a little bit, look at taking on some runs himself, a few snipes around the side, ask questions of the defence that maybe we haven't seen him doing for some time, and have the confidence to go out and just give it a crack. And if, you know, if I was talking to him, my attitude to him was, look, you have all the tools. You are an amazing player. You just need to get back to, like, you've got a bit more freedom, I'd imagine, under Farrell as well. Mm-hmm. Whereas under Schmidt, he may not have had the level of freedom that he might like to have enjoyed So you've got this freedom. Just go. No one is going to ridicule you for having a go and trying something different. Just go for it. See what happens. Because if you don't, you're not going to be kept anyway. I'll get the shepherd's hook. So why not? Throw caution to the wind and have a go at it. That would be the advice that I would give Murray, and I hope that's what we see today.
Yeah, I think you take every cap as your last.
Yeah.
And just absolutely leave it all out there.
And like on that, Peter, I mean, if you look at Cooney, what is happening with Cooney up in Ulster is exactly what I just said. He doesn't feel under pressure. He wasn't brought to the World Cup. He was left here at home, so he was able to focus on Ulster, and he kind of, you know, and this is often happens to players. He's kind of like, oh, sure, I'm not in the Irish squad anyway. I may as well just enjoy my rugby.
It's kind of like Gordon Darcy in 2003. Remember, he missed out on that, and then he revolutionised himself as a centre. You know, Willie Anderson and then Gagliarella pushed him in towards the midfield, and the rest is history.
Exactly. You know, you get that freedom. You're kind of, well, not in anyway. I'm never going to be in under that coach. Doesn't like me. I'll just get on with things. Gives you that freedom and loosens you up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's what Cooney did with Ireland. Now, Murray needs to sort of think that way as well. Mm. He needs to say to himself, look, I can do what I like with Munster. I'm always going to be in that position in Munster. So I'm going to open up my game a little bit. And I'm not exactly restrained at Ireland now either, because I'm going to be given the freedom by Andy Farrell to do what I want to do. And if I make decisions, I'm doing them because I think it's for the best of the team, or I see something in the moment in the game. And just get back to having a go, which is what he used to do.
Yeah. Well, look, moving along, I don't know if you saw last night, but the Ireland under-20s had a great win down in Irish Independent Park. They won 38-26 against Scotland. But the game and the result of the night was Italy under-20s won in Colwyn Bay away to Wales 17-7. That's a lot of work that Steve Abood and Conor O'Shea from the Irish system would be doing in terms of the development of Italy. Now, whether that counts for anything today in Cardiff, I don't think it will. But it's very encouraging to see that. And it's a huge result in the context of the growth of the game and the development. Because, look, Italy's record has been shambolic. They've won 12 out of 100 championship matches. They have a new coach in Franco Smith. They're obviously, they've got Parise and Giraldini have retired and moved on. And the selection of Carlo Canna at 10, that a fella who doesn't really like tackling, would indicate that they're going to try and play an expansive game and take on Wales in Cardiff. Wales, it's funny, they won the Grand Slam last year. No one's really talking about them, but they scored next to no tries. They scored the same number of tries as Italy did last year, 10. Yeah. England scored 24. So that's a fascinating game, but I cannot wait for France-England tomorrow.
That should be an absolute thriller. Yeah. How do you think that one will go, Reg?
I think England, it should be a thriller, absolutely no question about that. I agree entirely that it's going to be a great match. They're very exciting sides. You know, France at home obviously is an advantage, but I just think England might edge it. But it is a team for the future for France. Entomac at 10, you know, the likes of Fiku in the centre, Vakatara, unbelievably exciting combination, the two of them. Teddy Thomas, another flyer. So it has all the ingredients of French flair that we used to see in the past, and fabulous talented backline that can do serious damage. I just think with the likes of Sinclair, Toje, Laws, you know, Curry and Underhill up front for England, they might cause problems for that French pack, which might starve that French backline of the ball that they need. So I actually think England, as difficult as it is to go to France and get a victory, I think they could just edge that one.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, have you ever witnessed, I mean, such a refreshing start, but it's such an unusual sort of Six Nations with so many new coaches.
It happens after
in.
Most World Cups.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. Yeah,
you get a World Cup out of the way. It's usually a stale competition the 2 years up to the World Cup. And then it all starts afresh and it's all new. Out with the old, in with the new, blah, blah, blah. I mean, look at Wales with Wayne Pivach, or whichever way you pronounce it, I never get it right. He's talking about expanding on Gatland ball and turning Wales back into a more attacking side. Now, there's no doubt about it. Wales have fabulous talent as well. There's been somewhat written off in this championship, which isn't right either. I suppose you have to say that England are the firm favourites. Yeah, we don't know where we are. We're probably in second place, to be fair, in terms of the favourites tag. And then you're looking at Wales and France in third and fourth slot there. But it is, I feel this year of all years, would it be in the fresh start? A team like France, for example, huge number of changes, new setup, planning for 4 years' time, they could go on and storm this whole thing and have an amazing time of it. Yeah. Especially when they've got the likes of us and England at home.
I think. Sorry, Ken.
No, go on.
I think for those who are history buffs like myself, the nostalgia of having a Damien Penault and a Romain Antomac and those great surnames back in French rugby is really exciting. But as Reggie mentioned, Virimi Vakatawa, I'll make a call now, I think he'll be the star of the Six Nations. Mm-hmm. He's not a new phenomenon. We know his talent from Racing. He is an amazing player. And in that back line, it's really exciting. But when you look at Eddie Jones' selection, Maku Vunipola doesn't make the squad. They've got Joe Marler and Ellis Genjin. Now, he's already said that Vunipola will play next week in Scotland. Mm. But that just shows the depth of loose head prop alone. That's one area.
Well, it's Mackens and Marler was retired. Yeah. You know,
like, playing well though.
He was like, I'm not going to bother anymore, and he gets dragged back into that World Cup squad, and there he is now starting in the
horses for courses. I think it is.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's an unusual one. There's still no doubt about it. It's an unusual one.
Well, look, England and France have six Champions Cup quarterfinalists between them, and I think very much 2023 planning is underway, and they're looking to the future. The game needs a strong France. They've flattered to deceive too long for the last 10 years. They're a funny team in that they can go out and beat New Zealand and then lose to Fiji. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no real consistency with them, but the game needs them. And the back line, and, you know, Sean Edwards at defensive, he's in the defensive system now in France, and that's going to be an interesting change as well, and what kind of impact he can
have. Yeah, can they defend?
That's
the most interesting.
I know we're joking, but it is.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And I'm not joking, I'm serious. Yeah. Can they actually defend? Because they haven't been able to defend for the past 10 years. Mm. It's nuts. They always had an attack, but they never had the defence, but Edwards will change that. And if France can defend, well, then it's a completely different animal.
Yeah. I think 20-1 on the draw is the bet for the weekend. They've actually drawn 7 times. France have won 40, England won 58. They've drawn 7 times. Okay. That might be the bet of the weekend.
Might be the bet. Okay, the last word for Andy Farrell. Are we going to see a completely different sort of game from Ireland under the new regime? Or are we going to see it slowly sort of change?
The latter, I think. Yeah. I don't expect it to be
Nuts. Expansive. Yeah.
I mean, I do expect it to be more expansive. I hope we see less kicking in the game. I'd rather to see Ireland maintain possession and go through phases. I'm just not a big fan anymore of the box kick. It's too well controlled. People know what they're doing and how to defend it. You're like, players are just too good. They don't make mistakes under the high ball these days. So let's look at something where we're using the backline skills. Let's look at something where we're using backline moves to unlock defences. And let's look at something where we're bringing in a back row that we have, who are all ball carriers. You know, there's pace there in that back row. Bring them into the moves that we're using in the backline and use them as ways of unlocking the defence. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Ireland to win?
Yeah, I think 3 home wins this
weekend.
3 home
wins.
Okay. Ireland to win.
Okay, there you say. There you have it, folks. Ireland to win, Wales to win, and of course,
France to be England.
England for me. England, yeah, I was going to say, you're going. Okay, England. Okay, and I'll go to draw. How's that? 20-1. Okay, that's your rugby slot. GAA now, and Declan Drake joins us on the phone. A very good morning to you, Declan.
Hi, Ken. How you doing?
We were talking all about the numbers in the NFL, but the numbers last week for the match at Dublin and Kerry, I mean, 42,500, a 500,000 people tune in to watch it on TV. I mean, they're big figures as well. What a great opener, Declan.
Absolutely, big figures for two big teams, Ken, and we spoke about what the crowd level may have been last week on the previous show, and I knew it would be a good attendance. I didn't expect it to be that high. Mm. But what a quality opener to the National League from both teams. Credit to them for the quality of football that they produced in late January. And I think a special credit to our boys, Ken, because, as you know, they've been on holidays, they came back. They had only a handful of training sessions. In fact, you could count the number of training sessions they had in one hand before last Saturday's game. And the level of fitness that they had and they displayed throughout the course of the game was exemplary to their level of professionalism. And, fantastic game. Could have won us, could have lost us, drew it in the end. So, great night all around.
Yeah, there was no rustiness shown. I mean, by all accounts, I didn't see the game myself, but by all accounts, there was no rustiness really shown from the Dubs. But you'd expect them to maybe be a little bit sharper again today.
Yeah, that game would have brought them on a couple of more sessions during the course of the week, you know, but look, they were 3 points down to Kerry again in the last few minutes of the game, and we know that these boys don't do panic. They stuck to the task resolutely. They got the breaks. 6 minutes into injury time, they go ahead through Dean Rock, and you think, right, that's it. Mm. Particularly as 6 minutes had been signalled by the referee. But 3 minutes later, 3.5 minutes later, Kerry got the opportunity to draw the game, and fair play to young Clifford, he took the opportunity well, although it was helped a little bit by some indiscipline by Dublin as it was moved forward.
Yeah.
But look, if that's the standard of football that we're going to have throughout the course of 2020, bring it on is what I say, you know. Yeah. Well, no, just another point on the injury time.
Yeah.
They borrowed, if I may say, the sin bin rule from the ladies' Gaelic football, right? And I think it's a great idea myself personally, but I think it's about time as well now, Ken, that they bring the hooter system in to Gaelic football, because, yeah. I mean, in the ladies' game, you guess the amount of time that you're supposed to get playing the game, right? And 165 minutes or whatever it is goes, that's it. Hooter goes, game over. It doesn't matter what's happening on the pitch. I think we need that in Gaelic football and hurling as well. Are we going to see it? Probably not, but I certainly think it's something that the association could look at.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff in the papers during the week about the overtime and the extra minutes played, and the referee went a bit, he sort of expanded too much on the time over on the overtime. A lot of, you know, people were giving out in the papers. I mean, wouldn't it not be better to take all that off the referee, take it out of his hands completely, and like what they do in rugby, you know, the ball goes out, it stops play, or there's a free, it stops play, you know, the clock stops.
It does
make sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you still have the referee in control of the time, right?
Yeah.
And to a sense that he says, right, there's going to be 5 minutes of stoppage time, or 6 minutes, whatever it is. The board is held up by the fourth official, everyone in the ground can see it. Then it transfers upstairs, if you like, to the person who's operating the hooter system. Programs it in 5 minutes, right? And once that 5 minutes goes, the hooter goes off and the game is over. You get exactly the playing time. But look, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, let's move on, because, I mean, what a start for Dublin. Dublin Kerry, first of all. Then now they've got to travel to Castlebar to play Mayo as well. Two of their biggest rivalries. Doesn't get any easier for poor Desi Farrell. But, I mean, the lads here in the studio expecting a better sort of performance from Dublin. What way are you thinking?
Well, out of the frying pan into the fire, is what I'm thinking, to be honest, because there's going to be some cauldron of atmosphere in McHale Park this evening from, 5 o'clock. The ladies are playing too, of course, beforehand, but for the lads at 7 particularly. And, look, I mean, it's tough. It's a tough start, yeah. But, I mean, that's what he wants. That's what he welcomes, you know. And, again, he's picked a very strong team for this evening's game. You know, pre-league people were saying, including myself, I'd have to say, that perhaps, you know, you can have a nice mix of experience and bring through some of the younger players and give them valuable game time, you know. That really hasn't happened just yet, because the strength of the team that he's picked tonight, he's got two changes from the Kerry game last week. Rory O'Carroll back, I think, for his first league start in something like 5 years. Rory came back last year to the fold, didn't quite work out the way he would have liked, didn't get as much game time as he would have liked at all, but he's back this year determined to stake his claim for a place. And Paul Mannion in for Conor McHugh as well. That's the other change. So look, it's going to be a baptism of fire in his first serious away game down there tonight, but I believe that we have the players and we have the quality to come through and hopefully bring the points back east tonight.
Declan, Peter here, how are you doing? Mick Bone has made a couple of changes for the match that's on at 5 o'clock, so the curtain raiser. It's a real pity, isn't it, that I don't know how there's no joined up thinking in terms of the context of fixtures. You know, we're trying to encourage the growth of the women's game and it goes head to head with the rugby. Now, I know GAA probably feel, look, we're not going to change our rules for anyone else or our timings for anyone else, but it's such a pity because it's going to dilute a possible either attendance or crowd watching as well.
Yeah, it probably will, all right, Peter, but what can you do about that, you know? I'd be more moaning about the fact that if they weren't playing a double bill, if they had to go to Castlebar or wherever in Mayo and play the ladies' game tomorrow, you know, that'd be my way of looking at it. Yeah. It's definitely improving in terms of the double headers. We had the Cork ladies playing for the first time in Páirc Uí Chaoimh last week, and the Camogie team, I think, are playing in there today. So it's happening a lot more over the country. Yeah, your point is valid. I accept it, all right. But I think you just have to carry on. You have to look after your own game and your own association, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking the casual fan, that's all. You know, I think I'd love to have tuned in, but the reality is it's hard enough going up against Premier League. And I know it's very, you know, the GAA will come back and say, when do you propose playing a match? It's a fair point, but I don't know, particularly for televised matches and whatever else, in a scramble for space and sponsorship and everything like that, yeah. There needs to be a bit more joined up thinking, I think.
But what time would you play the ladies' match at then, Peter?
Well,
today?
The challenge would be whether you have it slightly, you'd have it earlier. You'd have it earlier in the day. Look, the problem is you're going to be clashing with rugby, or you're going to be clashing with football anyway. I would have had two different timings, to be perfectly honest. I would have had maybe separated, give ourselves a little bit more of a gap in between the women's and the men's game or whatever else. But it just doesn't seem.
There's two smart problems with that, as far as I see it. Right, first of all, if you leave too long a gap, people aren't going to go and watch the ladies' game.
Yeah.
Secondly, television dictates. I'm not sure what channel that Dublin Mayo game is on tonight, but it's on television somewhere, and they're the people who are calling the shots with a 7 o'clock throw in as well. So there's lots of complications in the mix, but I would still be of the view it's positive they are playing ahead of the men's game this evening. There'll be nothing worse than the men playing this evening and the ladies having to get up tomorrow morning and travel to Castlebar or Breffni or wherever in Mayo and play a national
game. No, play it on the same day. I'm not disputing that, but I just think a bit of a smarter break. You can do it. Loads of sports do the double headers and do the gap in between and create a bit of a family fun fair around the matches, show the whatever televised games and allow people to enjoy both. But anyway, it's probably just...
I think on a cold evening in Castlebar, you know, I mean, one match at 4 and another maybe at 6 or 7. I don't think it's that's a practical either, but I don't think the GAA or the ladies Gaelic would be too concerned about other sports, to be honest with you.
I suppose there would be a huge crossover as well, Declan, from the men's that would go down and support the women's as well, wouldn't they? You know, and
well,
travel together, would they?
Yeah, well, there are true, genuine cross-code Dublin supporters, yeah. You know, who will be in McHale Park at 4:30 this evening waiting for the 5 o'clock throw-in,
yeah.
You know. But, of course, the main cohort won't probably arrive until 6:30 or 6:45, you know, so which is a little bit unfortunate in some respect, because we've got a set of All-Ireland champions here as well who fully deserve as much support as they can get. And that's always an age-old argument, I suppose. Why don't they go in and watch the full ladies' game? But it's improving all the time. The more people go in, get exposed to the sport, exposed to the quality of the game, the more that they'll come back. And it's like anything really, isn't it, in life?
Yeah. What about the Mayo team to face the Dubs? They haven't beaten them since the 2012 All-Ireland semi-final. Dublin have won 12 and drawn 3 of the last 15. So what are you expecting from Mayo?
Gosh, is it 2012 since they won?
Yeah.
Janie Mac, yeah. Well, we know, of course, they've come close a few times.
Yeah,
very scarily close a few times over the years. Look, they battled with Donegal last week, Ken. They got a draw out of the game, ultimately. The last gasp equalising. What a goal it was, too, to draw the game. So their confidence will be high coming into the game from that. They've got the Dubs in their own backyard. League and Championship, two completely different animals. Big partisan home crowd behind them tonight. They'll have a right go at them, and they certainly won't fear them.
Yeah, okay.
The Hurlers play Laois. The next chapter in that particular rivalry after last year, that's a fascinating game in itself tomorrow afternoon in Parnell Park at 2 o'clock.
Huge. Huge, Peter, after last week's disappointment, shall we say, against Kilkenny down in Nolan Park. Completely flat performance from start to finish. Inexplicable, really. And they need a massive step up in quality and in performance levels tomorrow against Laois. They're already behind the eight ball, having lost. You know, Laois did as well, so that adds something to the game tomorrow. But I spoke to Matty after the game last week, and he was thoroughly shell shocked at the performance of his players. Hopefully, it's a one off. They're at home tomorrow. Hopefully, a good crowd behind them, and they can produce that better performance and get the result. Because to be pointless after two games in the National League is not where they want to be, because they do definitely want to kick on and push on for a place in the knockout stages of the competition.
And it's good to see Donald Burke back from injury as well after working.
Yeah, it is. And you know, Sean Moran made a return last week. Liam Rush has to come back, and one or two others as well that have been involved in colleges. So look, one swallow doesn't make a summer. You don't shout from the rooftops overly if you win. You're not overly depressed if you lose. It's a fine balance. You get it somewhere in between. And I'm sure that they returned to the training ground on Tuesday night, had a good shot about it, have worked hard on their game, and you'll see that improved performance level tomorrow.
Yeah, the Camogie team, Dublin against Galway, is on as well on Sunday, Declan. What do you expect?
Yeah, management for Dublin this year, Ken. So we wish them and all the girls every success. They are, to a large degree, the forgotten sport in Dublin. You know, we have your men's team, the hurlers, the ladies' football profile has risen significantly, as we know, over the last number of years. But the Camogie team, unfortunately, have been left a little bit behind. But a lot of good people there. They're working very hard in the promotion of the game. And it'd be a very, very tough task against Galway, the Ireland champion, certainly. So it doesn't get much tougher than that to start. But at least they're at home tomorrow afternoon.
OK. You'll be taking the bus down. I know Laura has her Dublin gear on here in one of the producers. She's on the bus down. I suppose you'd be travelling down as well.
Yeah, fair play to Laura. She is one of those true blues, isn't she? You know, if they were playing in the Phoenix Park at 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning, she'd be there.
Listen, at least she has her Dublin top on and not her Liverpool top. So there's a silver line at every cloud.
But both are real winners, Ken.
Say no more. Okay, enjoy the game, Declan, and enjoy the weekend of sport, and we'll speak to you next week.
I thought that would finish the conversation.
Yes,
all right, yeah.
Very abruptly.
Good luck, Ken.
Okay, have a safe weekend. Declan Drake there with all the GAA news. Okay, lots of texts coming in about our lucky 15 from Dean Ryan. 3 out of 4 last week, and here's the 4 for this weekend. Latest exhibition, the 12:50 at Leopardstown. The Boucher, the 2:35 at Leopardstown. Unexpected, the 3:45 at Leopardstown. Mr. Malarkey in the 3:35 at Sandown. Mr. Malarkey, Unexpected, the Boucher, latest exhibition. It comes to about 2,000 to 1. There you go. We're going to talk football now. I'm delighted to welcome Alan Cawley, who's probably in the park feeding the ducks at the moment. How are you, Alan?
Good morning, Ken. Morning. No, I have a morning off.
You have a morning off. Good.
Exactly. I'm chilling out here on the couch, Ken, just taking it easy. Getting ready for a big weekend.
I'm sure you're dissecting all the transfer deadline news, which wasn't much now, in all fairness. There's a big build-up on Sky all week, but at the end of the day, there wasn't much action at all. Were you a bit disappointed?
No, Jim White will have to get himself a new job, Ken, because he's absolutely milking this transfer stuff for the last number of years. And sure, yesterday it was just a damn squib, but I wasn't overly surprised because it's a tricky time of year, I suppose, to get fellas in, especially the top quality fellas, and unless you're going to pay a fortune, I don't think it's going to happen, really. So I suppose the most surprising thing was the fact that Man United were going for fellas who normally you'd see Stoke City trying to sign. So it just goes to show you where they're at the moment, I suppose. Yeah. Talk signing Josh King, and I know that they might reckon they're only looking for cover and stuff, and the Igalo one, he'll give them cover for 6 months, but I suppose if you're a fan watching in and you're looking at them going for that calibre of player, it just goes to show you where they're at the moment.
Yeah, it's very disappointing, isn't it? I mean, for, you know, when you had someone like Cavani, or was it Wilson and Bournemouth as well? Like, you know, not players that you would, but like Cavani may have been like a big name, but
yeah.
But you know, to get a Gallo, it's not what Man United fans would be expecting.
No, absolutely not. And I know people say, well, it's cover for 6 months, but as you said, Cavani was available, and they could have went all out to get him. You know, and I know it's hard this time of year, and I think the only ones I remember are kind of January, is Aubameyang signed for Arsenal a couple of years in January, and Berbatov was the big one, remember, a few years ago as well, and in the deadline day. So, but a lot of the big clubs, yeah, kind of tend to shy away unless you're going to pay a fortune. They're not really. And then you have, I suppose, a lot of those big players, if you were bringing them in, they've already played in the Champions League maybe, so that they can't play, obviously, in the latter stages of that if they've already played with their previous club. So it can be a tricky time, but certainly from Man United's point of view, yeah, unless he's going to wait till the summer, Solskjaer, but that's if he's even there, Ken. And I suppose you're probably, as a fan, you're tuning in thinking we could get maybe some sort of a statement signing just to show where... Now, in fairness, the Fernandes is a good signing. Yeah, that is a big signing. Mm. That's the calibre of player that you want to see coming into the club, and hopefully he makes a difference. And it'll be interesting to see how he does fare. And I think he's gone straight into the squad for the game tonight. So that was a big one as well. And that was badly needed, particularly in that midfield area, as we know.
Yeah. Are you expecting big things from him?
Hopefully, Ken, yeah, because as I said, he's the type of player that you'd want to see, the calibre certainly Portuguese international. He comes with good pedigree, scores goals for midfield. He's creative as well. And it's been crying out for a player like that, really, for a long time. You know, they've been relying on the young lad, McTominay, who's done okay this season. But you want to see kind of seasoned professionals and proper players playing for Man United. And that's what we've come to expect all over the years. So I think he will do well, yeah. As all the reports I'm hearing, and from what I've seen, the clips of him, he looks like a very decent player. So hopefully he does do well.
There's an interesting... Good morning, Alan. There's a very interesting comment from Pep Guardiola where he's talking about Leroy Sané's future. And he'd said that there'd been speculation that the forward was going to sign a new contract. And he said it's out of his hands. So you have to talk to the club's director of football. Now, that's a great buffer, I think, for coaches and say, look, I don't know what's going on. I don't deal with negotiations. It would kind of also indicate that they might be out of sync. And maybe the wheels are slightly coming off there a bit. That's like, for a player who's obviously highly rated and has performed... When he's been fit, it's an interesting, kind of unusual comment from Guardiola.
Yeah, I think with that Sané one, there's a bit of friction there, because if you go back to, as well, the World Cup, Joachim Löw didn't pick him in the squad as well, and by all accounts, his attitude isn't the best. So that's what I'm kind of getting from the Sané one. And obviously, he's a brilliant player, as we all know, and if he gets his head screwed on, should he be a top player, and a Man City could obviously do with him. But Mahrez has come in and done well for them this year. But definitely you would want Sané in your squad, but I can see him leaving, because that's been rumbling on a while. I know he's had an injury and that's part of the reason he's not playing as well, but there's definitely friction with him and Guardiola. And to be fair to Guardiola, this is something I admire with him. He doesn't care who you are or how good you are. You're either, you buy into what they're doing and what everyone else is doing, or else you won't play. And he doesn't care who you are, how big a name you are, how high profile you are, which is something I admire, because a lot of them, like, you go back to the Solskjaer stuff, and that's why I'm a bit critical of him, because Pogba is running all over them and walking all over them, and you just can't have that at a top club.
It was Borussia Dortmund seemed to do the best out of the transfer window between getting Haaland and then getting Emre Can, you see, yesterday from Juventus. So,
yeah, the Haaland one was a big one for United. Like, they really should have went after him, and especially with Solskjaer coming from that part of the world and obviously knowing him as well, and his dad and the links there. Now, I know it came down to, they were saying, because of the agent, and there's trouble going on there as well because of the Pogba stuff maybe, and they didn't want to pay a fortune to the agent. But look at what he's done since he's gone into Dortmund. It's been phenomenal, that, and he's going to be a superstar, that young Haaland. So that was the one really that they maybe should have went after properly. And why they didn't, I don't know. But they've obviously lost out on a potential star there.
Alan, I want to bring it back home a bit. Obviously, there was good news during the week with the FAI securing the financial safeguarding package and the $25 million. What did you make of it all? I mean, it's, I know, coincidental that it's been announced 9 days before an election or whatever, but, you know, it's good news for the people involved here with the FAI, good news for clubs. It just needs to be managed properly.
Of course it is, Reggie. Yeah, it's good news and badly wanted, as we all know. And I think certainly in terms of not only from the football side of things, but just safeguarding people's jobs and the amount of people that were worrying and the uncertainty that was going on for people in the FAI as well, behind the scenes, that many people wouldn't see. So I think from that point of view, it's brilliant and it's very welcome. And obviously, I suppose, as Gary Owens touched on in his interviews during the week, and Roy Barrett, the proof will be in the pudding just in terms of how to perform. Some people, I think, including myself, were a little bit sceptical of the process of how they've come about to be obviously in control now. But I think it is welcome, and I think, to be fair to Harry Quinn as well, he's a very respectable figure obviously in the game, as we all know, and that's where I think he will bring his strength in going to the likes of the government stuff and obviously looking for increased funding, because he is viewed and is seen as a very respectable and credible source obviously with the career he's had also. So that's where I think you will see his strengths going forward as well, and it is very welcome.
Is the first thing that they need to get right though, is it to go back to the clubs, the grassroots clubs, and get them in around the table discussing the detail?
Yeah,
well, should that be the format?
Well, I think, to be fair to Niall Quinn, he's speaking obviously from, we all know that he had that kind of group put together last year, and yeah, there was a document put out in terms of changing the game from a League of Ireland point of view, and he has mentioned the League of Ireland a lot, that's where the main emphasis and focus will be on. And I think that's the right thing, Reggie, yeah, because it has to filter down from the highest level of football. And that's not just me speaking from a personal point of view in terms of me playing League of Ireland, yeah, and how strongly I feel about it. I just think it has to filter down from the top rather than the other way around. And that's the way it was, obviously, under the regime with John Delaney, because all the strength for him would have been obviously helping the schoolboy clubs and clubs around the country like that. So I think that's a good thing. But obviously, it was at an EGM last week, a lot of the schoolboy clubs now were finding that if all the emphasis is going to be on League of Ireland stuff, where do we lie in that? And I suppose that's where the divide and the friction is. And it's been so fragmented over the years, and that's been a major issue. Rather than everybody singing off the same hymn sheet, it's been just too fragmented Irish football. And there's so much self-interest involved in as well, that that's what's been holding the game back for such a long time, rather than actually people thinking of the greater good of the game. So I think if they come in and make those kind of structural changes, and we see that the emphasis will start from the top and filter down, that the schoolboy clubs will be rewarded as well, that everybody can kind of gain from it, rather than just people thinking of their own little corner. And I think that's going to be the biggest job for Niall Quinn, is getting everybody on board, because, as I said, it's so fragmented Irish football, and all people think of is their own little patch, sadly. So I think that's going to be his biggest job, but they have skillful people involved now, and hopefully they can bring about that change.
Alan, if you could invest in one part of Irish football, and if you had a magic wand and a limited budget, I know it's all hypothetical, where would you feel the greatest opportunity for growth is, or the greatest need for investment?
The growth is obviously in the League of Ireland stuff, and the potential there. Like, Peter, I was at a meeting during the week about this, the All-Ireland League stuff. And if you were just to compare where our league is at compared to small countries like Denmark and Scotland of a similar size, similar population, we're a million miles behind in terms of the commercial revenue that they're bringing into their country through their domestic game compared to what we are doing at the moment. And there's so much potential involved. Some of the figures and the data that I was looking at during the week, it would absolutely blow your mind. In terms of just how far we are behind. Now, hopefully, the potential is realised, and I would be massively in favour of the All-Ireland League if that would ever take place, but there's a lot of complexities involved in that. But I think just from the fact that if you take small steps, and obviously Niall going in now, and the people behind him, and I think in fairness to the government as well, what they've done in putting, obviously, the stipulations in place in terms of the independent directors and how many there should be as well, I think the game will start to improve here, and obviously the league as well, and all that kind of stuff. You will see major growth and major development in all areas of the game, I think, with proper governance behind it now.
Were a lot of the teams in the League of Ireland, were they in favour of an All-Ireland League, or was mainly the teams in the north of Ireland that were sort of more opposed to it, Alan?
They're the ones opposed to it, Ken, up the north. Yeah. And I think the major stumbling block, to be fair to them, is obviously the European places. It's such a massive incentive for all the teams now, because obviously our league, the prize money is so paltry in both leagues. Like, you get 100,000 for winning the league down here, yeah. And I think up the north it's only 40,000. So it's desperate, the prize money really is. Yeah. Whereas the clubs are obviously aiming for that European money, because if you get through one round of Europe, as we all know with the Europa League, it's 250 grand. It's massive money. So they're just afraid that if they were to go to an All-Ireland League, that their European places will be diminished in those opportunities. But what I suppose the All-Ireland League people are trying to impose on them, that if we were to get a proper TV deal in place and things like that...
Money going up all around, yeah.
And exactly, and you wouldn't even need to be qualifying for Europe, because there'd be money around everywhere.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes on. Okay, Alan, enjoy the weekend. What's it going to be? Where are you going to start with?
I'm heading to Galway now, Ken, for a few pints. That's where I'm going. There's a stag in Galway, yeah. Oh, so I'm off to enjoy myself.
Yeah, but you'll be catching, I suppose, all the sport on TV.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I'm looking forward to the rugby. Even though I wouldn't be the biggest rugby fan, I do like the Six Nations.
It should be a good game.
Yeah, okay. Enjoy your weekend.
See you, Alan.
Thanks, lads.
Okay, Alan Colley there with all the football and, indeed, the stag weekend in Galway.
And the best of luck
and
to the
a bit
stag
of sport thrown in as well. Well, who's going to win today? Ireland by how many, Reg?
I'll give them 12 points today.
Ireland by 17.
There you heard it from Peter and from Reggie. And indeed, that's all we have time for you this morning on Dublin's Talk and Sport. A big thanks to all our guests. Producer of the show was Paul Morris and Laura Berry. Saturday Live with Carol Dooley is coming up next. And the best of luck to Ireland and the Dubs. And Manchester United, of course. Don't forget those. See you next week.
Bye.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Leary to Agar on the far side. Little dink at a bit of space for Tommy Bow to chase. Bow gathers. Shane Williams is getting him. He's not going to get the Ulsterman. Bow's in on.